Hey everybody, I'm Jay Worthy and this is the podcast for anyone trying to inject some adventure, purpose and balance into their lives. 28 Summers is all about living life adventurously, seizing the moment and optimizing your life. It's great to be back releasing episodes again after a short adventure fix for me. Please keep the feedback coming, it absolutely means the world to me and I love hearing how much my guests are inspiring you all. Now my guest today is Gus Barton. Gus is a fitness business owner and an ocean rowing specialist. After completing a sports science degree, Gus set up Gus Barton Fitness, a specialist training and conditioning business. He has coached ocean rowers who have gone on to break 8 world records and complete 23 successful ocean rowing crossings. But Gus also walks the walk. With his teammates, he broke the transatlantic rowing record in 2015-16, and he also took on the Round GB row during the height of the COVID pandemic. This is a really great chat, and I hope you love it as much as I did. Gus, welcome to the 28 Summers podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to chat to you today.
Thanks so much. Very, very excited to be here. Talk all things adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, so one of the places I always like to start with people is childhood. And the reason for that is that, you know, my own story is like really mega adventurous as a kid. And then in my young adult life and kind of early adult life, I was less adventurous. And then I came back to it. And I always love to hear people's stories. So I'm curious to know, were you like really adventurous and sporty as a kid or more indoorized? What's your story?
Yeah, I guess slight, not necessarily reverse of what you've gone, but my adventures definitely come later into my life, kind of as to where I am now. When I was younger, it was all sport. Just I was, you know, absolute sports. So I've got an older brother who's the same, like super sporty. Dad's very sporty. So is my mum and sister. So everything, you know, we had done was, you know, was sport. We, you know, go on holiday and play tennis. Or then, you know, just when I was at school, it was all the different sports. And then at home in the holidays, you know, just playing everything against my brother, from football, rugby, cricket in the garden. So, it was kind of that was more my childhood, as opposed to anything outdoorsy. Like I never did, you know, any of this kind of stereotypical scouts and that kind of stuff. Just never really did any of that. So, didn't really know camping or anything like that. So, yeah, it was much more later in my life that I've come to appreciate and come to enjoy that side of adventure, probably.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. And I was, you know, really sporty as a kid as well and did loads of sports. But kind of interspersed with that was just, I think, probably a little bit by virtue of where I lived as well. I grew up in kind of a fairly rural area. So then there's more opportunity to go out and climb trees and swim in rivers and do all the things your parents probably would be mortified if they knew you were doing. So the sport kind of thing was the theme for you. And when you're going through school, I guess you were in various sports teams. And then you ultimately decided to do a bachelor's in sports science, right?
Yeah.
University of Exeter. And you've been on this really awesome journey. So I always stalk people before I have them on as a guest. So I'm on your LinkedIn. I'm trying to get like piece together the story. And you're a really interesting journey. So, you know, personal trainer at David Lloyd's, you were a trainer at a rugby club, then to row in the Atlantic, a master trainer for a brand, and now also a business owner as well. So it's quite a lot of stuff. That's a pretty decent run. It's hard to know where to start with all of that, but I think I want to start on ocean rowing if we can.
Yeah. So that kind of, ocean rowing came to me by chance more than anything. I had just sustained like another fairly serious injury playing rugby. And I kind of went through a period. I'd always trained for something. I'd always had a kind of a purpose behind my training. And that for a long period had been rugby. And I then got a serious injury, which I just couldn't really come back from. So I decided to stop playing rugby. And it kind of left, not necessarily a void, but I never really feel then suddenly like I was, you know, really working towards anything kind of personally with my training. And a very good friend of mine who I've been at school with since we were 7, called Angus Collins, came to me. He had just started working at Rannoch Adventure, which is one of the kind of brands in ocean rowing, and he said, you know, I'm thinking about putting a team together to row the Atlantic, would you be interested? And I wouldn't even known where to start with what, you know, what was going on, what the boats looked like, anything. I just had, you know, a complete naivety. And I guess that's probably that kind of blissful naivety was probably the best thing that could have happened, because I just said yes, because I was like, that sounds wicked. You know, that sounds like a real, you know, a really cool thing to do. So it was kind of, it was probably like 6 months down the line when I actually realized what I was doing, when we first got on our boat and we first went down and saw it all. So I think, it was kind of probably luck that I almost more than anything that I got into it from there. And then that kind of then built our like 2 year campaign up to doing Talisker in 2015.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I love the idea that you might not have said yes if you'd have actually known what it entailed. Because it's a seriously epic thing. I'm a kind of an armchair fan of Talisker. I've been watching it for ages, and you know, daydreaming of maybe one day giving it a crack myself, much to my wife's dismay. But can you, for those people that don't know about the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, maybe can you just share a little bit more about exactly what it is? What it entails.
Yeah, sure. So it's a 3,000 mile unassisted rowing race from the Canary Islands, La Gomera and the Canary Islands, across to Antigua. You set off in sort of mid December, as that's kind of would be the most favorable sort of times with trade winds and currents. You push off from La Gomera and then you're on your own out there. And it's, you know, it's one of the most incredible adventures. It's one of the only times I think at the, you know, in our day and age where you can find that like almost complete solitude where, you know, if you don't want to be contacted, well then you can't, no one can get hold of you. You don't see anyone other than the people in your boat for best part of, you know, 30-40 days for us. And I just think it's an amazingly well-organized event. It's, you know, it ticks all the boxes in terms of making sure you're prepared. And it's, you know, it's a race. So it brings that kind of level of competitiveness that I've always loved in, you know, in sport and everything like that. So having, you know, having other boats out there, not necessarily you won't ever see them, but just knowing they're out there and you are kind of racing against them. It's like, you know, I think that's an amazing event. It really is.
Yeah. And for most people, I think when they hear of rowing, they think, you know, Steve Redgrave, Matthew Pinson at the Olympics, or they think of, you know, the Oxford Cambridge boat race, right? So these are very different rowing boats. Maybe tell people a little bit about what they look like, you know, how many, there was four of you in the team, right?
So there was four of us in the team. You've got the main kind of rowing deck, which sits pretty flat to the water. It's like kind of three and a bit foot wide. And then you've got cabins at either end. So you've got closed cabins with like airlock doors on each end. And that's basically where you would sleep. And you basically do, for us, we did a shift pattern of kind of 2 hours on, 2 hours off. So two of you would always be rowing, two of you were sleeping in either end. And they're amazing pieces of kit. We had a Rannoch boat, incredible design. And on there, you know, you've got a water maker to desalinate seawater, turn it into drinking water. You've got all of your auto helms and navigation equipment, and it's, you know, they're pretty advanced pieces of kit for, you know, what would just be like a rowing boat that you're going out in. And I think that, you know, they give you a level of kind of feeling of safety definitely when you're in the cabins. It kind of feels like you almost can lock you away from, you know, what's going out on the rowing deck, basically.
Yeah, and it. There's a lot of technology in these things, like you say. I know they're not cheap boats, but once you got into it and you kind of realized the magnitude of it, how intense was the preparation? I think it was a 2 year process, right, to get ready.
Yeah, so we did a 2 year prep. You know, we were quite young when we did it, and the hard, almost like one of the hardest things for us was, how do you go about raising the amount of money that you need to, you know, be able to buy the boat, be able to buy all the fittings for it. All of your, you know, food and everything like that, all of your important kind of life-saving kit, you know, it all comes at a serious cost. So I think the biggest thing for us was, how do we, you know, four of us pretty much fresh out of university, how do we go about approaching people to sponsor us to kind of, you know, effectively make our dream a reality? And I think that process definitely took a lot longer probably than we thought. But once we kind of got that moving, the preparation, we had always targeted to aim to do about 700 miles of training in our boat, 700 to 1,000 miles of training in our boat. So we then set about looking at a couple of different challenges that what would be like smaller challenges in comparison to the main thing. So we rowed from the Norfolk coast across to Holland, as one of our training rows. We did a big row up the kind of east coast of England, and then our biggest one was a 7-day row from Salcombe all the way around the south coast up into London. And I think, you know, those experiences give you a glimpse as such of what it'll be like. But you always kind of got the safety of having seeing shore. And there's a very different experience there to seeing shore and then, you know, for the first time that losing sight of shore is, you know, after the first night, it's, you know, you push off, you've got 12 hours of rowing, it then goes dark and you then lose sight of shore for that time. And that's the last time you see it between then and Antigua. So as much as the preparation you can do, I don't think anything fully prepares you for that mindset of losing it for the first time.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that's like. And I love your comments about kind of the real genuine feeling of solitude and wilderness. Like you're in the middle of the ocean, you're really at the mercy of the ocean. But yeah, I can imagine that, you know, I've heard people talk about this a lot, and that, you know, the nutrition part, the physiological prep is all key, but psychologically there must be a lot of pressure on you once you're out there. Now there's just four of you on the boat.
Yeah, massively. And I think the big thing is a bit like you don't really ever know. You know, you do your training and, you know, you feel good and you feel prepared, but you never really quite know until you're actually out there in it and into how and necessarily how you're going to react. But what I try and encourage with the clients that I work with is actually it's the preparation that you put in will always make the kind of mental side that bit easier. If you've ticked all the boxes you know you possibly could have done in through your training, through the 2 years of training, whether that's, you know, the physical in the gym stuff, you know, your erg stuff, and then on your water stuff, if you've ticked all those boxes, you can sit on the start line and think, I couldn't have done any more. Then I think mentally that plays into your advantage massively, because, you know, although you won't have experienced all the circumstances that might happen when you're out there, you could have ticked a lot of those off. And I think that was our biggest goal, is through our training we were going to be the best prepared boat sat on that start line, so that no matter what, you know, whatever goes wrong, it's like, well, we know we've done everything we possibly could. And I think that played massively into definitely my, I can probably speak for the others, definitely into my headspace, in that I think that really helped me mentally when it kind of, we got out there and we had lost sight of shore for the first time.
And did you, Gus, when you went into it, did you already know that you guys wanted to try and win it, to set a world record, or was that just a function of getting across there and starting to realize you were in first place?
We knew we were a strong team. We wanted to win it. We were four very competitive young guys, so we definitely knew we wanted. We had never really thought about, you know, race records and world records as such, because it's so difficult in a sport which is so heavily dictated by weather and Mother Nature. It's very difficult to compare year on year each crossing. You know, you could win the race in 60 days. Equally, you could, you know, the following year, you could do it in 30 days and come, you know, third and not get a race record. So it's so difficult to compare race on race. So we had always set out with the intention that we were going to win it. The kind of race record and world record started appearing probably that little bit later, as we realized we were starting to make really good ground up. You know, kind of day 10 to 15, we were like, actually, we're really starting to move now. You know, then I guess it starts coming into your head a little bit.
And how was the weather for you? I mean, obviously you got across in a record time, but did you have some kind of gnarly weather, or were you pretty lucky?
Yeah, so we crossed it in a race record time. We were set to look that we were going to break the 4-man world record. And about mid-20s, day 22, day 23, we got a call from a weather router saying there's a system coming in and it's not looking great. So we actually, instead of rowing west, we basically rowed due north up towards the system. It then hit us and then blew us due south again. So we, over like a 3-day period, we basically made no ground, but equally we didn't lose any ground, which a lot of the other boats in the fleet had done. But that was, I mean, that was rough. We ended up being on power anchor, which for those who don't know, it's a big parachute that you basically drop into the sea that fills with the current. So it kind of holds you against the, like, unfavorable winds. And we were on that for 18 hours. And I, you know, I can only describe that as like being locked in a washing machine. Like, you're just getting thrown all over the place in these conditions. And that was really rough. And weirdly, without having set off to think we were going to break a world record, we had then put ourselves into a position where we thought we were going to break a world record. And then, you know, we've been, not only we've been thrown around in the cabin, we're also just then suddenly seeing that world record being taken away from us. From nothing, we, you know, from no fault of our own, we haven't done anything wrong, but it just got taken. And that was a really tough, the day after when we kind of started rowing again, we still had some headwinds, but we were like, right, let's, you know, let's get three up and let's really try and push against these for a bit. And there was a real weird kind of silence on the boat, because it's so difficult to process things when you're under that level of fatigue. And like, you know, although we hadn't set out to do it, it suddenly, it probably had gone into all of our heads. We thought, yeah, we're going to break this world record. And then, you know, with one phone call, it's like, bam, it's gone. That record's just suddenly taken away from you. And that's a really hard thing to deal with.
Yeah, it's a great lesson though, isn't it? In kind of worrying about the things you can control. You know, we always hear these lessons about control the controllables, and it's nice to say, but actually, that's a real example of there's stuff that's entirely out of your control. So there's really nothing you can do about it. And I always think, I've obviously not done any ocean rowing, but I've read and heard stories replayed of you know, rowing for hours on end and either not going anywhere, not making any distance at all, or as you said, maybe even going backwards. And I think, I can't imagine what that must feel like, but I always say to people, imagine if you were running, and as you were running, you're not making any ground. Like, it's you're essentially on a treadmill. You're not going anywhere. It must be at times soul destroying. How did you personally kind of cope with the psychological pressure? Did you like to engage a lot with your teammates and chat and kind of have banter, or did you like to kind of disappear and have the quiet time in the cabin?
Yeah, I'm definitely one that I need to, I was much better when we were kind of chatting or talking about it. Like, if anything, the cabin was like the worst place you could be, you know, it's stuck in your own head. You know, even if you're out on the oars and not making any ground, at least it felt like you were kind of doing something. That kind of those, you know, hours in the cabin where you're stuck, kind of in your own head a little bit, it's a horrible place to be under, you know, huge sleep deprivation, you know so fatigued, and like trying to deal with those, you know, trying to deal with, you know, strains of disappointment are difficult when you're on, you know, comfort of your own home, let alone when you're trying to, you know, process it in those environments. So I always felt, you know, being out with one of the other boys kind of chatting on deck, trying to row, trying to do something, trying to put it right, always kind of was better for me.
I recently listened to the audiobook of The Crossing, you know, the Ben Fogle and James Cracknell two-man at Crossing of the Atlantic, and they had a couple of Barneys, you know, on the way, where they didn't really know each other at all before they did it. So you guys, obviously, I think you went to school together, or you at least knew each other really well. So how did you get on? Was there any friction at all on The Crossing, or did you generally get on pretty well?
Honestly, I couldn't, and I never will be able to speak highly enough of those three other boys. We didn't say a bad word to each other. And I think, you know, other than that storm that hit us, I think it definitely helps that, you know, it was going to plan. We were leading the race, you know, and everything like that. But we just had just such an awesome time. And I think for me, a huge part of, you know, these adventures is spending it with someone else. I have like absolute respect for that. I think it's the ultimate, you know, sign of endurance and adventure, doing something solo, both from a mental and physical perspective. But for me, like, the joy of, you know, the adventures I've done is being with someone and experiencing that with them. Like, no one can take away what the four of us have been through. And I think that's such a powerful thing that we're all like still like closest mates. And I think, you know, that bond of having a crossing together is just incredible. And that's why, you know, for me personally, doing it with someone else, whether in a pair or, you know, as a four, I think it just for me isn't just incredible.
Would you ever do it again, like in a pair or something, or another four, or do you think now you've done it?
I wouldn't do the Atlantic again. I apart from anything else, I have such incredible fond memories of it. I think the risk of going back over your footsteps again and not having the same, not coming away with the same feeling I have now, would taint my opinion of it. And I don't want that at all. So I wouldn't go back out and try and do the Atlantic again.
What's your happiest memory of that? So you obviously got fairly fond memories of it, and it did broadly go according to plan, which is great, apart from the storm. I'm curious to know what the best memory is. Is it like setting off from shore with all the giddy excitement of the challenge ahead and nervousness? Is it midway through, amazing sunset, coming into Antigua? What's the best memory?
Yeah, do you know what? I think and my fondest memories probably come from like later on it, once you're right into the routine of all. But a couple of things, like I used to absolutely love the like shift when it would just, you'd come back onto the deck and it was dark and then you're just coming into sunrise. That was like always my favorite shift. And Jack, one of the guys I used to do it with, we would always be on that shift together. And that would always be the shift we'd get our like snack pack out for the day. So that would have all our treats in it. Yeah, and he would always get it out, like eat both of his chocolate bars straight away and then be like, oh, I haven't got any left. Like that shift for me, we would always be like in a good mood. We'd always be chatting. We'd always chat through that time. So those, I always look really fondly at those. But actually, after we got hit by the storm, we started rowing, as I said, really quiet and weird feel kind of on the boat. And it's kind of like, you sometimes feel like these things kind of happen for a reason. But this huge whale then just like popped up right next to the boat. And it was like, I can't tell you how close it was. And we had some little snorkeling masks on. We put the snorkeling masks on, harnessed on and jumped in. And we were just like kind of sat there in the, like obviously the middle of nowhere. And just this huge whale just swimming around the boat, coming underneath it, popping its like up next to the side of it. And that was honestly one of the most kind of surreal in one way, but most incredible moments like that I've experienced, not only just on the crossing, but actually, you know, in my kind of life as well. Like, I always look back at that as like one of the most amazing things that I've, you know, lived in and witnessed.
That's extraordinary. I can imagine that was just breathtaking. Well, and what a privilege as well to be able to see, you know, that creature in that environment, just away from kind of human, other humans or civilization. And you guys were raising money as well. So I know that was a key part of what you were doing. Who did you raise money for? How much did you raise?
So we were raising money for three charities. We raised money for the Rob George Foundation, which was a smaller charity. One of the guys, Joe, it was a guy at his cricket club who really sadly got cancer. So we were raising money for the Rob George Foundation. And then we were raising money for Teenage Cancer Trust and Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And we raised just shy of £150,000. So like incredible. Yeah, I mean, absolutely incredible.
Oh, good for you guys. That's amazing. And I really enjoyed just learning more about what you did and what you achieved and your story. And it's great to hear it firsthand from you. And I think then just as your story evolves, you had planned to take a crack at rowing the Pacific, right? That was the next step, which is often the way with these things. Like how do we top off the Atlantic? Well, we'll go row the Pacific, which of course is a bigger deal. And there's a lot more to consider there. And then this thing called COVID hit. So tell us about the original plan and then what you did instead.
Yeah. So actually, Jason, who was in the race the year that we did the Atlantic, he was in a boat called Lap 35. They had a couple of issues on there. They were kind of meant to be our direct competitors. Ended up two people got off their boat. Anyway, Jay had wanted to row the Pacific and had kind of wanted to put a team together. So he'd already done the Atlantic kind of a second time with Angus Collins, the guy that we had done it with. And ended up putting a team together, myself, Jason, Angus, and Duncan Roy. So Dunk's done a couple of Atlantic crossings, and it's like just all things knowledge of ocean rowing. So the four of us had kind of got this team together, and we were really excited. On paper, you know, Jay had two ocean crossings, Angus had three, Dunk had two, and I had one. So like the crossings that we had together on that boat were amazing, our experience. So, you know, we were really excited and thought we could do something pretty special with the Pacific, with the experience that we had. And then, yeah, very sadly, when we were meant to be flying out about a month before, we just like, there was just no possible way that we could have got out there with the rules and regulations about getting out to America. So, yeah, that was kind of snatched away from us.
So then, I think most people in that situation might just say, okay, we'll wait till COVID blows over, but not ones to be defeated. You decide to try something different.
Yeah. So after it happened, Duncan and I kind of had a phone call, and we had both put in so many hours of prep and kind of felt so fit. You kind of got ourselves to what would be like your absolute prime, ready to go. And so we thought, you know, we've got this time that we would have been doing the row. We're physically, we couldn't be more prepared. So we kind of thought we were looking at things that we could do, with obviously not involving travel. So the two of us kind of basically in a 2-week period put the idea together that we were going to try and row around Britain. And yeah, so we kind of 2-week campaign, we raised, you know, a little bit of money just through contacts we had, friends, family, and that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, set about. We left Ramsgate and headed along the south coast to row around Britain.
Amazing. Was that part of the official GB row, or did you do it separately?
No, it was separate. It was just on our own. So just off our own back.
And you made it all the way around.
We didn't, sadly. We got to just north of Newcastle. So we had spent 50 days out at sea. And it was actually my brother's wedding, about two days after we got off the boat. And it was, you know, gutting. So many different emotions I've got from the round Britain. Like, obviously devastated to have not made it all the way around. But equally, I feel, and I think I speak with Duncan as well, we feel incredibly proud of what we achieved. And it probably more so now that kind of disappointment of, you know, the initial not finishing all the way around has kind of gone. You can look back at, you know, we, in a 2-week period, we put a campaign together and we really went out and just tried to do something and tried to make an adventure of a time when, you know, we just weren't going to be able to do anything.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's a good deal of resilience there as well. You know, COVID hits, but still trying to do something special and adventurous. And, you know, like you say, it's completely out of your control, but you put in all of that effort and all of that training. And there's nothing more frustrating than having done all of that and then not being able to do it. I can't imagine, for example, the Olympians that are still desperately waiting for the Olympics to take. It must be awful because they're so regimented and they're working to this specific cycle, and suddenly for it to all be blown out of the window, it's just incredible.
So heartbreaking.
But. Yeah. So what next for you? So you know, GB row, there is an official kind of race now. So is that something you'd take a look at again? Do you still want to take a crack at the Pacific, or are you done with the ocean rowing?
I don't know. I think probably after I got off the boat from going around Britain, I had, you know, potentially thought about doing the Pacific, and the team's going to go out and try and do it this year, hopefully, if they can get out. And I kind of, you know, deliberated over it a bit, but it wasn't quite right timings for me in terms of my business and, you know, obviously taking big chunks out and, you know, not over this period, not being able to see anyone. But yeah, I'm not sure what it will be with ocean rowing, but like, I will always be focusing and moving towards different challenges. I love the process of preparing more than any, like, I love that, you know, coming up with an idea, sitting down and being like, how am I going to get myself from where I am now to be in a position where I can, you know, take on this challenge that, you know, I want to do. And I think that I love that process of doing that. And I love doing them. I love doing challenges. I love testing myself, seeing kind of what I've got. You know, and I think, you know, endurance challenges are one of the best ways to really actually have a look deep into yourself and see, you know, see what you've got there, and see how hard you can push yourself.
Yeah, mate, that resonates with me so much, and I feel exactly the same. Like, I also there are different types of challenges as well. So this, I like sometimes signing up to things that are structured and they're already established, and there are people that have done it before. You know, Talisker is a good example of something where you can read plenty of accounts of people that have done now the track. Well, not plenty, but there's a good deal of accounts out there, and so there's a framework and a race structure and things to work towards. And then other times, like you did with the row, it's kind of a first. So I spoke recently to Jordan Wiley, and he started to paddleboard around the UK. Well, no. You know, nobody had ever done that before. So you can't go and find resources online for that. You have to start to piece it together. And I think both of those are really exciting.
Definitely. I think personally for me now, I did the Talisker, I've done a couple of other endurance events, kind of organized events. I think for me now, the appeal really comes to doing something now that hasn't necessarily been done. Like the Round Britain Row kind of almost showed me in a way that you know, if you come up with an idea and you plan it well, like, you can do these things without kind of needing that necessarily organized structure there. So I think for me, over the kind of the next few years, the appeal comes in, like, actually just going and doing something that isn't necessarily structured. You know, you don't have your set feed stations there, you haven't got this support boat or those kind of things. It's like, actually, you just got to figure it out yourself. I think that's appealing to me.
I like that as well. And I like that, in that situation, you've got to do the planning, and the result is directly proportional to how much planning and prep you put into, how much thought you put into it, and also being thoughtful about what will happen when you kind of hit the hurt locker and it doesn't go your way. I'm doing an event in September this year, which I don't think anybody's done before, but I'm pack rafting the full length of the Thames. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not rowing an ocean, but it's about 300 kilometers, and it will start in, you know, just above Lechlade and go all the way down to the Thames Barrier, running segments and then paddling segments. Of course, because nobody has done it before that I'm aware of, I'm having to do every single piece of the planning, right? So where are the paths I'm going to run? Where will I stop? What happens if I miss that stop because something went wrong? Where else will I stop? And I'm enjoying that aspect of it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something I've definitely learned a lot more since doing these different like adventures and that kind of stuff. I've definitely have much more appreciation for these kind of things. I probably, you know, the Atlantic, went into it not really knowing, you know, that much about any route planning, weather systems and all these kind of things. And I think that's the important thing with adventures and endurance challenges. You kind of pick up and learn these things along the way. And I definitely, I probably look as my hardest challenge I've done would be the Round Britain Row. You know, I probably take away the most lessons by far, both about myself and also about, you know, how you prepare and, you know, planning and these kind of things and the value of that in endurance challenges and endurance events.
What do you think, you've touched on it a couple of times, but what do you think are some of the things that you've learned? I know it sounds a bit cliche, but you've learned about yourself or the way that you handle stressful situations that may even have been helpful for you in other parts of your life coming out of that?
I reckon the biggest takeaway, or definitely from the, you know, the freshest in the mind is from the Round Britain Row, is my ability or an ability to deal with, not necessarily bad news, because that makes it kind of sound, you know, like more, you know, health issues or family health issues. So not necessarily that, but for us, like we were constantly getting, you know, calls from our weather router. All right, you're going to have a bad system. You're not going to be able to row now for 2 days. You're going to be stuck here. And it actually, my ability to process that and to start with it, every time we got it, it crushed me. Like Dunk was like, it's, you know, it's fine. But because suddenly it was out of our control and I just wanted to keep pushing. I wanted to keep pushing. Now I felt ready. I felt good. My body felt good. But it's like, you just can't. The boat, you won't be able to move against it. So I think for me, a huge thing is how my ability to kind of process and deal with these things. And I think that is that definitely filters through, you know, into life itself. As to how you deal with that. So that would be a massive one for me. But I think from the first time I did the Atlantic, obviously you set off and you're like, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I've got it mentally. Will I be able to kind of handle it? Like physically, will I stand up to it? But ever since I, you know, got off the boat and finished that, it definitely changed my mentality to what I realized I was kind of physically capable of. And also just, you know, if I go and do a 2 day running event, it's like it changes your perception of that. Like I think probably before the Atlantic, I'd be like, 2 days of running, no way I can do that. Whereas now I'm like, actually 2 days of running, all right, 2 days of really hard graft, 2 days of digging in properly, you know, deep into the hurt locker, but it's going to stop. Like I know there's an end point, no matter, like after 2 days it's done. You know, I'm pulling the trainers off, I'm getting into a hot bath and it's finished. And I think from rowing oceans or doing events where you don't know there's an end point, you can't tell whether it's going to be finishing in 10 days or 20 days or 30 days, you have to learn to be able to process that. And I think that's had such a massive impact on me, especially with all the endurance challenges I've done.
Yeah, I love that as well. And I wonder, Gus, whether, because you're a business owner now, you've got Gus Barton Fitness, which I'd love to chat to you about in a moment. But that must have been massively affected by COVID, right? Fitness in general, fitness facilities have been kind of decimated by COVID because they've been shut down and unable to open. I wonder whether those experiences at sea helped prime you for that. And have you been able to handle that better, do you think, than you would have done perhaps if you hadn't been out in the boat?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think it definitely, I kind of think it also just, I kind of, it maybe just changes the way I look at things, and it maybe, you know, there's nothing I can do to change that. I can't change COVID. I can't open, you know, the gym back up that I work at. I can't just go and see clients because I want to. So you kind of just got to sit back and take it. And I guess that's probably what I learned a lot of on both of these rows, you know, on the Atlantic when it went wrong with the storm, and then also often around GB. It's like, actually, sometimes you just got to sit back and be like, there's nothing I can do. I've done everything I can. You know, at the moment, I'm doing everything I can, whether it's on Zoom or programming for people. I'm doing all of that. I'm doing everything I possibly can to make it best for them. But like, that's all I've got. And I think, you know, from those two rows, I definitely probably would have, before that, would have really stressed to just constantly trying to be doing other things or stressing myself or, you know, what else can I do? Or whereas actually sometimes I think it's just good to be able to, now I can sit back and be like, I've ticked every box, I've done everything I can. Now I've just got to kind of wait it out.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good to know. Now let's talk a little bit about your business, because I think one of the things that you offer there is kind of ocean rowing support and training packages. Ocean rowing is clearly growing in popularity. You've got now a couple, two or three kind of structured formal races around the world that people can get involved in. And it's getting more kind of media attention. Are the teams that you train or the people that you train, are they kind of already super fit athletes, or are they more like everyday ordinary people doing extraordinary things?
I think that's the beauty of ocean rowing at the moment as a sport, is you have such a variety of people. You've got some people being like, I want to win the race, or I want to, you know, cross an ocean in a record time. And then you've got other people like, actually, this is the one thing for me. This is my adventure. This is what I want to do. And it, you know, whether it's going to take me 60 days or 100 days, I don't mind. My goal is just to purely cross. And I think that's what is so cool about Talisker, the event, because you have that, you obviously have everyone there. But I think ocean rowing, it opens people, and it has a very wide kind of audience of people. So I have such a variety. I've got people that come to me, you know, 2 years out being like, right, our goal is to break a record. Our goal is to cross this in the fast time. Our goal is to win the race. And then other people just being like, look, our goal is to get across. I want you to prepare me so that physically I stand up to it. But like, I can't commit to doing six sessions a week. I can't commit to that. So, and I guess that's, for me, that's what I love training people for this, because it's working out what people want, working out what they need, and then devising a program to mean that it's effective in the time they have or can give me to preparing them the best I can.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I think it's great. And I think that people listening to this podcast might be, you know, discovering ocean rowing for the first time, or perhaps some of them have seen it and thought, well, I could never do that. And I think the reality is for a sport like people can do it, right? It's not like you know, rowing on a river, the technical skill required to perfectly balance that boat and get the oars going into the water exactly right in rhythm. I think, I mean, at least in my perspective or perception, is that it's a bit more forgiving, right, in the sense of the technique. So then it becomes more about endurance and, you know, mental fortitude, those kind of things.
I just think, you know, you just, when things are going that long, you just need a real gritty resilience. You know, and people get that from different things. Some people get it because they've done a load of endurance stuff. Other people get it because, they've got past and beaten a disease. You know, like these things, they build that resilience and grittiness in you to be able to really dig through those hard times. And I think that's more than anything what, you know, you need, just to be able to kind of constantly be getting back up on the oars, just dig, go in again. Yeah, through the middle of the night, you've just had 2 hours sleep, you've got to get back up and do it again. It's just having that ability to be able to keep doing that. You know, that you can be a technically perfect rower, but, you know, mentally maybe not that strong. And, you'll find it much harder than someone that's maybe technically not quite so good, but properly gritty and mentally resilient. Like, they're probably going to do better over those long periods.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. I think you're right. And I think that for people listening in, you know, one of the messages I like to give, I don't feel like the podcast is in any way kind of convincing people to be adventurous. I think that a lot of the listeners to this podcast are trying to live more adventurously. Maybe they're dreaming of a big challenge, or maybe they just want to do more micro adventures on a daily basis. But one of the roles that I hope that this podcast serves is helping people see, you know, what pathways they might be able to take. So if they did have an interest in ocean rowing, after this podcast, they can look up your website. You've got a section on ocean rowing, and that comfort knowing that it's not all supreme athletes going across, trying to get across in 37 days. Some people take 60 plus days. And I mean, there's a great book out there, Four Mums in a Boat. I don't know whether you've read that, but I mean, there's remarkable stories all around the world of these everyday people doing extraordinary
things. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think it's definitely a sport that has shown people that, yeah, you don't need to be an elite athlete to do it. And that's what's so good and so appealing to it. And I kind of just hope that keeps you know, that keep that, it keeps that, that sport keeps that kind of essence in there. It doesn't just go to a complete, you know, we want that elite level. I want people to be more and more prepared. Sure, if you want to be that, but like equally, I want it to still keep that kind of essence of, you know, as you say, the everyday, you know, kind of adventurer that just wants to do one big extraordinary challenge. And there's still that option for them to do that there.
I feel like ultra running, you mentioned running a couple of times. I feel like ultra running is get going that way a little bit as well, where, you know, it used to be the thing that only crazy elite athletes did. And now a lot of, you know, everyday people are signing up to, you know, big one day ultras, maybe even multi-day stage ultras. And, you know, there's this kind of notion of competers and completers, and that actually there's a huge amount of value just to signing up for something that scares the shit out of you, and then finding a way to train and prepare for it, and then complete. And just even, you know, I interviewed one of my earliest guests, a guy called Jim Mee, who's the founder of Rat Race, the adventure company. You know, he said that just getting to the start line is an incredible achievement for people who signed up for something like that, maybe, because, you know, just that in itself is the scary part, and just getting to the start line is something people should be proud of. And I love that, because it means it's not just about these supreme, extraordinary athletes who get incredible first or fastest or furthest. It's also about normal people who do incredible things.
Yeah, I think I like the getting to the start line thing. I think, you know, when, especially for like the, you know, the talents, because suddenly by the time you get to the start line, all the cameras are there, all the media attention's there, everything like that. Whereas actually what people haven't seen is the, you know, the hours of commitment you've put in, you know, behind closed doors, or that you've put in rowing up the east coast of England in the chucking rain and freezing cold for 3 days. And it's, you know, it's those little bits and pieces that kind of people definitely don't necessarily see or hear about or know about, but it's like they're almost like the most valuable bits. I don't know, that's kind of what I love, that's what I love about the preparation phase of training, is that no one sees it, no one sees the amount that you've put in and that kind of stuff. It's only kind of, you know, once you're at the start line of, you know, of this ultra running event or rowing, it's like that's when people are like kind of see it all.
Yeah, I love that. Well, look, we're coming up on time here, Gus, but I'm curious to know, you know, I talked a little bit about ocean rowing. Will you do GB again? Will you go for the Pacific? But just in terms of general endurance challenges, which is obviously something, you know, like me, you love and you're kind of excited about. As lockdown, I don't want to tempt fate, but as lockdown looks like it's starting to get lifted and we can see a world kind of post-COVID, are there any endurance challenges you've just always dreamed of doing?
I've got one that I have got in my head that I would love to do next summer. And it kind of pulls in the same kind of idea of like when the rowing with like the shift panning, but doing John O'Groats to Land's End or vice versa as a four-man like consecutive running relay. So you're basically doing the same idea, like this might be like half an hour on, hour and a half off, but you're doing it all day, all night, and seeing the time you can do that as a four-man team. I just think it's, you know, Land's End to John O'Groats is kind of one of those like iconic things, I think, especially for us here in the UK. It's kind of one of those things that everyone kind of looks at, whether it's on the bike or whether it's run. And I wanted to do it as a team because I kind of what I touched on earlier about experiencing that, all of those things as a team. So I wanted to do it as a team. And I think a four-man team, you've got the potential. And I've looked into it and I can only see that like a 10-man or more team has done it. So I don't think anyone in like a low number has done it. And, you know, if we could get in kind of, you know, in 7-8 days, that would be, you know, be an amazing, it would be just, I just think it would be an amazing both adventure in what you can see, because there's so much of this country that I haven't seen, and you know, that's such an amazing way to see it, but also such a massive feat of endurance, you know, that getting running so demanding on the body, you know, far more so than rowing, and that idea of, you know, hour and a half off and then just 30 minutes on, I just think it would probably be hard.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a great idea. I hope you pull that team together and you give it a go. It sounds really cool. And there's a few Land's End to John O'Groats or vice versa running events that are kind of coming up out of the woodwork. I don't know if you saw the Rat Race one that they're doing. That's a 35-day event where they're taking 50 people or something. It's pretty amazing.
Right.
But you run everything, right? So I love the idea of relaying it and seeing how quickly you could get it done.
Yeah. So it's kind of got a bit of both. You know, you've got a bit of a speed challenge plus, you know, the adventure of seeing it all. And so I thought about it actually just before last year, last lockdown, when I was like, you know, I've done a lot of training. Like, could I try and do something before the GB row? And then we put the GB row together. So it's kind of been in the back of my mind as something that I just would like to now tick off, or, you know, at least give a go of ticking off.
Yeah. Well, I for one, I'm going to enjoy watching that one. So good luck with it. So just one of my, you know, last questions really. 28 Summers is all about living adventurously, and a lot like we've just spent the time talking about. I think for me, the notion of living adventurously is more a mindset than anything else. It's just being open to possibility, saying yes more, pushing your boundaries. And I think for people listening who are wanting to do that, who are wanting to naturally live more adventurously and try new things, what might be your advice for them?
I think just start. Don't necessarily have to start huge. Like I, you know, I probably started my adventure on the Atlantic, but, you know, now looking at it, I think, you know, there's so many small things that you can go and do, whether, you know, whether that's even if it's a day, you know, a day walk in the Yorkshire Moors, whatever, there's so many small things. I think just start getting into it and start experiencing and being outside and, you know, experience the kind of joys of that. And I think start with that rather than, you know, looking at, you know, whether it's starting with an Ironman or these kind of things that seem like such huge challenges that you kind of set up and say you're going to do it. And then you almost get that kind of negative spin being like questioning whether you can do it. So I think just, you know, starting with something small, starting with something, you know, different, just getting some time outdoors and challenging yourself in that way, I think would be my advice.
That's great advice. So final question, where can people find you online? Where can they follow you?
So I've got website is glassbartonfitness.com. And then my Instagram handle is ocean_ready. And that's more just all of my rowing prep and things like that.
Awesome. Gus, it's been a load of fun chatting to you today and hearing about your adventures. And thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, whether you've got aspirations to row an ocean or not, Gus shares some great wisdom here about tackling huge life challenges and the work he does with his clients. Please give him a follow at ocean_ready_ to keep track of his awesome work and see what that next challenge that he's got coming up looks like. Thanks as always for listening. It really means the world to me. It's it from me today. I'm going to be back soon with another amazing guest. But in the meantime, stay happy. Stay healthy, and remember to live adventurously.